You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
On this episode, I welcome Shivanku Misra, who leads the global marketing and digital analytics function at Hilton Worldwide. Shivanku is a global leader with 12 plus years of management experience in creating as well as implementing analytical solutions with quantifiable business impact. Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. I appreciate you finding time to talk to us today. Can you tell us a little bit more about your role with Hilton and what falls under your purview?
Absolutely, I'm happy to be here. So I am responsible for data and analytics for marketing and digital functions at Hilton. So what that means is there are two components of my team. The first component is what I call as performance analytics. So basically help marketing understand what are the key strategic priorities, how are we tracking on them, how is the campaign performing, how are we doing within the customer segments, and also how is how are we comparing to our competition. The second part of my team is what I call as marketing effectiveness. This is basically helping making marketing more effective. So trying to understand what's the right marketing mix, what is the right multi-touch attribution that we should have by channel. We do a lot of test and learn. And we also do machine learning and natural language processing, essentially to try and improve our content. So basically try and create an experience for the consumer, which basically connects with them. So that's what I do at Hilton.
Sounds very exciting. How long have you been with the company?
It's been about a little over a year. So I would say almost 1.5 years. Majority of my team is in the US, but I do have a part of my team in Singapore and a part of my team in London. So it's been an exciting roller coaster, I would say.
You briefly touched upon, some of the advanced technology trends such as artificial intelligence and machine learning. I want to dive a little bit deeper into that from the overall advanced technology standpoint, which are reinventing technology in general, data analytics. We're experiencing that right now. How do you think these trends will impact marketing from innovation standpoint? And what are your thoughts on best strategies to adopt such technologies?
Oh, great question, John. So what I would say is there's a lot happening right now out there in the market. And what I mean by that is marketing has actually evolved over the last 5 to 10 years. And marketing is not seen more anymore as a traditional advertising function. Today, marketing is seen as a growth function, where you are responsible to bring new customers into the funnel and try and engage those customers and eventually retain those customers. Also, marketing is going to do a lot more of transformation. So it's going to contribute on how business evolves to meet the needs of these customers. Now, why those are important things for us to know is because the customers that we now have, have evolved, in terms of the access that they have for the information that was probably limited to fewer customers, I would say 5 to 10 years back, but now they have a lot of data on their hand, and they actually expect a very, very seamless experience across channels. Now, what that means is, and for marketing particularly, is we need to keep up the pace along with our pace of customers. So one example of that is 5 years back, our customers did not really make a lot of decisions based on digital personal assistants. So today we actually have customers asking their Alexa or Siri or Google Voice, basically where to go shop, where to buy, what are the reviews. So a lot has changed. So what that means for marketing is we will very soon have a tremendous amount of automation. Now this automation basically means we'll have at some point machines, marketing to machines, right? So we'll have to automate the content. We'll have to automate and adapt to what the customer needs are and how they've changed. And at the same time, we also have to think about personalization. So customers today expect an experience where a Netflix shows them, the relevant content for them. At the same time, they also show them what's trending across the country. So you know, customers want access to more information, but they also expect, like, you know, some level of personalization. And that's where, like, you know, AI, machine learning, as well as, like, you know, robotic process automation could be key to how successful the marketing function is for an organization. So talking about, you know, touching on, like, you know, let's say RPA, robotic process automation, we can actually, like, you know, massively, like, you know, increase the scale of how much personalization can we offer. So instead of, like, you know, offering a great experience to, let's say, our, you know, our top level or top tier of customer segment, can we actually bring that personalization to all tiers of our customer segments? Can we understand their past purchase behavior? Can we understand where are they coming from? Can we understand what are they interested in? And then, like, you know, talk to them about what do we have that actually meets their needs and expectations. So to do that, RPA will be key, like, you know, to basically automate a lot of intrinsic or, like, you know, organic processes, like, you know, for example, content, like, you know, we used to, like, you know, test content, you know, and the industry does that using A-B testing and multivariate testing. But can we, like, you know, increase the scale of that testing? Can we start testing it, like, you know, at much faster pace? Can we start automate processes like auditing content, like, you know, auditing the images? And can we use machine learning for that? Or can we use natural language processing to try and understand what are the customers talking about? So, you know, we have so many channels for customers to talk these days on, like, you know, social media being one of them, but, like, you know, reviews, blogs, like, you know, and, like, you know, and so on and so forth. So we are trying to kind of, you know, I think using technology for marketing will actually be key in defining our success for the future.
That sounds very exciting. And I would imagine with the amounts of data that you have available, you know, at Hilton, that there's a lot of opportunities for you to leverage a lot of these technologies for, you know, driving some of the marketing decisions and strategies. So definitely sounds like a lot of, you know, innovative and exciting projects that you're leading at the organization these days.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. And at the same time, like, you know, I would like to stress on the fact that, like, you know, while we have to, like, you know, improve the customer experience, we'll have to improve our, like, you know, our speed at which we respond to these customers and hear them and act on what they are saying. But at the same time, we want to respect their privacy as well. So we have, like, you know, GDPR in Europe, or we have CCPA here in the US. So we are very respectful of, like, you know, what exactly, you know, our customers are choosing. Like, you know, are they choosing to kind of, you know, remain private? Or are they, like, you know, willing to kind of, you know, dive in and get the full experience? So it's been a very interesting ride thus far.
Mm-hmm. Right. I would imagine. We briefly touched upon innovation in general. So mm-hmm. when it comes to that, when it comes to innovation, especially during these times,
right.
Very interesting, very unprecedented times these days. Curious, what strategies and methodologies do you deploy for your teams that consistently help you come up with innovative ways to solve certain problems for your products and services, or just in general using innovation to drive growth, to help propel some of the, you know, the strategic objectives of your organization?
That's a great question. So I think the key to be doing, like, you know, innovation correctly is to understand that innovation is not really a one-time gig. Innovation should be something that becomes a part of your DNA, that becomes a part of your core fabric of the organization. So, like, you know, I'd love to share about four things that I think can really work to, you know, make innovation a habit for an organization. And I share that because, like, you know, like a couple of jobs back when I was at PayPal, we actually created the innovation lab for the organization. And that innovation lab was not centered around solving one or two challenges. It was centered around, like, you know, identifying the problems and, like, you know, keep identifying them and keep archiving them and, like, you know, keep going into that database and trying to understand how many of those problems can we solve today and how many of those problems can we solve for the time to come. So based on that experience and based on, like, you know, some of the things that you've done in the recent past, I would like to say that, you know, there are four things that I would stress on, like, you know, for marketers to focus on when it comes to innovation. One, try and, like, you know, understand how much are you benefiting from your current set of customers and what is the value that you have provided to them. So it's not a one-sided thing. It's not like, you know, trying to understand the value that customers have brought to you, but try and understand what is the value that you brought back to them. And then try and understand how has that value changed over a period of time. And has there been any pocket, like, you know, where the value actually has gone down? And this is the value that you have provided back to the customer. And if you notice that, you know, there's a certain set of customers, or there's a certain geography, or there's a certain brand where you are not providing the same amount of value that you were to the customer for that price point. And that price, again, here is a dynamic term, like, you know, price obviously keeps evolving based on inflation and so on and so forth, but let's keep all of that constant, right? So try and understand how much value are you providing today versus what you were providing yesterday. And if you notice there has been a decline, please go and solve for it immediately. Because if you do not, if you get too complacent, the customers today have a choice. And, like, you know, they will, like, you know, transition to the next best option. So I would say constantly be on a lookout for customer lifetime value, but also the company lifetime value. And keep making sure that if at all there are pockets that come up where our value to the customer is declining, please go and, like, you know, change it. And this is the transformation I was talking about. Number two is try and understand the people that work for you, like, you know, the team members across, like, you know, your current team, but also your extended team. Try and understand what is the challenge that they have, like, you know, that you can actually solve. So innovation is not always about your external customers. It's also about your internal customers. It's also about, like, you know, making them, like, you know, not just be happy at work, but also making them, like, you know, scale, like, you know, their output, like, you know, and giving them the tools, technologies, as well as processes to basically, like, you know, deliver things at a much magnified scale. So so one strategy that we've deployed, like, you know, I personally have done, like, you know, for the past few years is try and, like, you know, ask your, you know, internal customers, your team members, your extended team members, your peers and your leaders, try and keep asking them for their challenges. And try and keep a database or a list of all their challenges. And try and keep revisiting that database every month or every 2 weeks to try and see, like, you know, based on what you have, how many of those challenges can you solve for? Now, obviously, we have constraints in terms of budgets, in terms of time, in terms of resources. So we might not be able to solve all of those challenges all at once. But it's a good idea to kind of, you know, keep a tab on that and, like, you know, keep solving as much as you possibly can, so that your internal customers are as happy, like, you know, with your support as your external customers are. That's number two. Number three is product. So what I mean by product is, like, you know, today, like, you know, we don't really talk about goods and services. We talk about the overall experience that the customer has with the organization. And that experience transforms or, like, you know, evolves into a relationship. But, like, you know, if you are not, like, you know, meeting the expectation, now I'm going back to the point number one, where you look at for values or the value, like, the company provides back to the customer. Deep dive on that, like, you know, deep dive on that to try and see, do you have the right portfolio to meet the future needs? So we are all very focused on current needs, like, you know, this is what the customer wants, this is what they expect. But please know that the customer expectations are changing at a much faster pace. So, you know, if a customer has, like, you know, a certain expectation that your current portfolio does not meet, then the customer will actually start, like, you know, getting, like, you know, a bit nervous, anxious, and eventually might consider, like, you know, switching. So before that happens, try and predict, like, you know, what is, like, you know, going to be the customer, life cycle. And, like, you know, plan backwards, like, you know, think about, like, you know, okay, if this is where the customer would be in 5 to 10 years from today, what can we do today to meet the need of the customer in 5 years from now? And that's where we talk about cognitive analytics, like, you know, understanding, like, you know, the thought process, the decision-making process of the customer. And today we have the technology to kind of, you know, actually, like, you know, forecast and predict, like, you know, how that is changing. So we are talking about quantum computing today, which we were not, like, you know, 5 years back. So number three is definitely product. So keep making sure that you are progressing on delivering the product and, like, you know, providing the service that the customer actually will expect. Like, you know, what they expect today, we know, but try and understand how their needs are changing and evolving. And last but not the least, the number four point there is try and, like, you know, have an open mind, not just to your peers within the industry. So your comp set or your competitors, please think that, you know, your competitors might actually not be the present in the category that you're playing in. So I would say, like, you know, get inspiration from organizations, even from outside your comp set. Like, you know, try and see, okay, so today I'm a Hilton. What can I learn from, let's say, like, you know, a bank? Or what can I learn from, let's say, you know, a social media company? Or what can I learn from an e-commerce company? So there's so much happening, and, like, you know, all industries are at a different pace at the time. But while the companies are at a different pace, it's the same customer experiencing all those companies all at once. So, you know, your company might not be at the same pace as a bank or as, like, you know, a search engine or as a social media company. But the same customer is experiencing your organization and the bank and the search engine. So to have that mindset, like, you know, have a mindset to learn and get inspired from across a variety of industries, and try and see, like, you know, how much of that can you bring in and how much of that should be on your roadmap. Sorry for a long answer, but very passionate about innovation.
Right. No, absolutely. I like how you compartmentalize that into four specific points, which is very helpful. Thank you for breaking that down.
Sure.
It sounds like that when it comes to marketing trends in general, that you do a lot of research and observe a lot of, you know, the industry trends and, you know, other things that are going on in the market in general. And I'm curious, which of those trends are you looking to actually implement within your organization, if any? And what is the next big thing for marketing that will come out as a result of current times from your perspective?
Great question again. So I would say, like, you know, again, I'll break it down in two parts. The first part is, like, you know, what is the trend that becomes very relevant for an organization like ours? I would say it's, like, you know, personalization, hyper-personalization. So instead of, like, you know, doing a broadcast communication to all our current and potential customers, we actually might want to take a step back and understand what is that they need and, like, you know, customize the offer for a John versus a Shivanku versus, like, you know, someone else. So try and, like, you know, offer that experience. So that is, like, a trend. I think it's very, very relevant. But again, like, you know, the pandemic that we've had, the coronavirus crisis, was kind of unprecedented and has changed a lot of things. So one thing that I have, like, you know, stressed a lot in the recent past and, like, you know, recent communications with other leaders across organizations is the fact that, like, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, is the fact that we need to kind of, you know, come up with a methodology to understand company lifetime value. Now, company lifetime value is, like, you know, let us try and understand. So all of us have talked about, like, you know, how is the customer life cycle? You know, how has the customer evolved? How has the customer changed? And, like, you know, should we bring in new customers? Should we get rid of some customers? Should we, like, you know, do something extra to retain somebody? So we've talked a lot about that. Today, the customers are actually in the driving seat. Now they are talking about, oh, so I have these 5 subscriptions. Which of them should I retain? I have these, like, you know, 5 credit cards. Which one of that makes the most sense for me to kind of retain? Should I pay the fees for all 5 of them? Should I pay the fees for 2? They have actually had the time to kind of think when they, you know, they have saved that time on, like, you know, the commute, or they've saved that time because, like, you know, of like, you know, an upheaval in their work situation. Like, you know, there are, like, so many reasons, but people have had the time to kind of, you know, think. Also, there has been a financial pressure, like, you know, so again, like, you know, economics, like, you know, there are 2 parts to it. One is, what is your current situation financially, but also what is your future situation? And while all the people might not be impacted today, but everybody is, like, you know, re-questioning, like, you know, why should they keep spending? Why should they keep doing what they are doing? So one big thing for organizations to kind of think about is company lifetime value. What exactly is the stage in which you are in for that customer? So let's say Shivank, who actually, like, you know, has been buying from that retailer for last 5 years. When I started buying from them, I was probably, like, a deal seeker. But today, like, you know, that is my go-to place because I love their assortment, right? So a very general situation. Now, company needs to understand, like, you know, is Shivanku still a deal seeker? Is Shivanku coming back because, like, you know, he likes the assortment? Is Shivanku coming back because of that email that we kind of sent him to remind him of a sale coming up? Is he coming back to get more points? So basically try and understand, like, you know, how has Shivanku changed and evolved? And how have you changed and evolved for him? So from being an organization or from being a company that sold him just the discounted product to now being the go-to place for his entire family, you have evolved. And like, you know, if you have, then you have to think about like, you know, what have you done, like, you know, to stay in that position and what can you do more to kind of make the customer retain you? So instead of like, you know, thinking about like, you know, the value or the customer lifetime value that we've had from these customers, like, you know, think like a customer today. So I would say like, you know, companies need to come up with company lifetime value by customer segment and try and understand like, you know, is that value not growing at one of those pockets, and go back and like, you know, do something about it if you are not. Because please know, like, you know, if you are a subscription plan, if you are like, you know, if you have a loyal set of customers, but that loyal set of customers is not getting the same value from you anymore, please know that they have options. Please know that they might switch. And that is very expensive to kind of, you know, fill the gap. So yeah, I would say like, you know, company lifetime value is a big trend that companies should focus on coming out of the pandemic. Like, you know, think about why should you be like, you know, customer's first choice, like, you know, when it comes to buying that product or that category, and how can you retain that position and like, you know, or gain that position.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I love this, especially, you know, the personalization aspect of that. I would imagine that for a company like Hilton, that would, you know, that becomes of utmost importance, because everything, you know, that you guys do is catered towards that personal experience, that individual approach. So it sounds like a lot of the things that you are leading right now in terms of that, you know, the data analytics or data science in general to support the marketing initiatives, mm-hmm. are of, you know, tremendous value.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To shift gears a little bit to talk about hiring and attracting the top talent to your team specifically, mm-hmm. I'm curious, when during your interviews, when candidates interview with you, tell us a little bit about that experience. Do you get creative with your interviews? Do you keep it pretty traditional? And what do you look for in some of the responses from the potential candidates when you go through the interviews?
Yeah, so happy to answer that. So I would say like, you know, for certain things, I'm very traditional, but for certain things, I'm absolutely not your traditional person. And one of those things is interview and hiring process. So what I've always hired for over the last, like, you know, 12 years that I've managed people, I've always hired for the right attitude. So so I would say, like, you know, there are like four or five things that I stress a lot when I'm hiring somebody is, number one, I am always trying to look for somebody who's eager to kind of learn and deliver, and has that right, like, you know, positive mindset. Like, you know, I would rather, like, you know, have a person who's willing to learn and has a positive mindset than somebody who, like, you know, actually knows a lot but might not be very open to change and learning. And that becomes a problem because, you know, especially my space, like, you know, analytics, data science, technology is evolving so fast. Like, you know, you might be great at something today, but you might not, like, you know, find that relevant 5 years from now or 3 years from now. So I want somebody who is, like, you know, willing to change, who has an attitude to go and seek help when needed, but ultimately, like, you know, has, like, you know, a delivery mindset, somebody who would come in and deliver and, like, you know, wants to learn. And sometimes the right answer for me is, like, you know, yeah, I don't know that, but, like, you know, I'm sure I can come and learn it. And here's what I've done in the past. So I'm so impressed, like, you know, by such individual. Number two is basically, I try and understand, how these individuals, like, you know, approach a problem. So that's where, like, you know, I get a bit more traditional. Like, you know, I want to understand their thought process. I want to understand, like, you know, like a situation where they're actually, like, you know, have inquired some, like, you know, they've actually worked on something which was a bit more ambiguous, like, you know, a bit more, like, conflicting and not super clear to begin with. And how did they resolve that conflict? How did they came out of that ambiguity? So so I'm looking for individuals who are creative problem solvers. Number three, I respect and always appreciate, like, you know, honesty and integrity. So like, for example, if you tell me you're an expert in an area, I really want you to be an expert in that area. So because I might not be the expert to kind of, you know, ask you the right questions, but please know that there might be somebody that I know within the organization who might be, and they will actually ask you the questions around that area. But I always want to understand, like, you know, what are your true strengths and what are the areas that you really want to develop on? So you know, I would say, like, you know, my golden rule is please be as honest as possible, because it's good for both you and for the organization. Like, you know, what if you kind of get a job based on some kind of deceptive perception that you create about yourself? You land the job, but you get in and you realize, oh my God, I'm such, like, you know, so different compared to what the expectation here is. And that's when you stop enjoying your work. So much better situation is you actually be very honest right from the beginning. If you are really a great fit, you will get the job. If you are not a great fit, like, you know, this might not be the best job for you. Like, you know, there might be something else, like, you know, that is great for you. So I would say, like, you know, integrity is extremely important. Number four is basically, like, you know, as I said, I'm traditional, but also non-traditional. Number four is basically like my traditional part of things. So where I am constantly looking for, like, you know, people who have the right core concept. So, like, you know, as I said, like, you know, you might not know everything. Like, you know, you might not know, for example, how to write a code. But if you know the science behind it, if you know, like, you know, how it's done, I would, like, you know, still be very impressed with you. Versus, like, you know, if you come and tell me, hey, the right answer to do is, like, you know, write this code. And what if the language itself changes next year? So you know, have your solid, you know, core concepts. And last but not the least, like, you know, one thing that I've, like, you know, done a few times, not always, is trying to understand, like, you know, who the person really is. Like, you know, and when I say who the person really is, like, you know, I love to understand what does their family think of them. Like, you know, what does family mean for them? What do friends mean for them? Like, you know, so basically trying to understand, like, you know, overall who the person is versus, like, you know, who the person is in the office. So yeah, that's, like, you know, how I look for people. And, like, you know, knock on wood, I've been lucky to find some of the best people that I've got the opportunity to work with.
right, absolutely. And I love some of the examples that you give in terms of really, especially when it comes to not knowing a particular response to a question when being asked during the interview, that
right.
It's, you know, if you don't know, it's okay. But I think it's more important, how do you deal with that, you know, uncertainty or something that you don't know in your approach to figuring things out, being proactive, and actually what you said, being honest about it.
Right.
In terms of most in-demand skill sets that are hardest to find in your industry, I would imagine has to do with data science in that space. Curious to get your opinion on what are those skills that are, you know, the most in-demand and hardest to find, and what strategies do you deploy to attract such top talent to your team?
That's a great question. So what I would say is, like, you know, in our industry, like, especially within, like, technology and data science, some of the most demand, like, most in-demand skill sets are, like, you know, having a knowledge and deep knowledge of statistics and mathematics. And being able to transform or translate that knowledge into actual problem solving, like, you know, actually, like, you know, creating an architecture and, like, you know, coming up with the final model outputs, but also translating them into, like, you know, actionable insights for the business. So one example is, you might actually go and do a complete predictive model from scratch, and you come back and say that, hey, by the way, to grow your rooms or, like, you know, occupancy, can you, like, you know, plant 10 more trees, right? So there might be some kind of correlation there, but that's not an actionable insight. Like, you know, that I don't really think makes any common sense. So have, like, you know, that mindset where you look at feasibility and practicality of what you are recommending, and also appreciate the fact that science is only the first step to understand the art. Art is actually much more complicated. So what I mean by art here is the domain knowledge. Like, you know, one example is, you do a marketing mix optimization and you look at all possible data points that you have access to, which is basically marketing spend, like, you know, by channel, by market, by week. Now you come back and, like, you know, present your beautiful model, and then you realize that you actually forgot to include two channels. Now, it's not because you, you know, had those channels in the database and you forgot to include them. It's because you never really brought those channel spend information in the database. The reason is, you might not be an industry expert. You might be a data expert, but you might not be somebody who is doing this for a living. So, like, you know, create your circle of friends and peers within the organization. Learn from the domain experts. Bring everybody into the fold when you are solving a problem. So a problem can be solved by data, correct? But it's, a problem cannot be solved only by data. It has to be solved by data plus domain expertise. So, you know, have that mindset, like, you know, bring in mathematics, bring in statistics, and, like, you know, have a mindset to kind of, you know, come up with insights that businesses could act on. And ultimately, like, you know, have some kind of, you know, quantification of the value that you brought back to the business. So now that said, like, you know, what the hardest skill I would say is, like, you know, within our industry to find is somebody who could do both these things. Like, you know, somebody who could do mathematics, but at the same time can also do translation into actionable insights. And, like, you know, there are very few people out there. So, you know, we have a larger number of data scientists today than I would say when I was hiring 10 years back. 10 years back, you ask somebody, like, you know, do you know analytics? They would be traditionally a market research person. And today, like, you know, we have, like, you know, colleges and business schools, like, you know, doing bachelor's and master's in analytics and data science, like, you know, kind of programs. So we do have a lot of talent coming out. But what I always keep telling this talent is, it's not the language that you've learned. It's not the code that you picked up. It's basically the foundation that you built on statistics and mathematics that's going to take you much, much farther. And always, like, you know, have a mindset of, what is a truly actionable insight? And insight is not an observation. Insight is basically something that the business did not know, like, you know, before you went in to do the whole exercise of, you know, predictive modeling, for example. So what strategies do I deploy? I basically try and, network and connect with a lot of people in our domain. I try and, like, you know, I love speaking, as you can probably guess from this podcast, but I try and, like, you know, attend a couple of events every year, basically where I can go and, like, you know, speak and, like, you know, hear the speakers, but also network with, like, you know, talented individuals within data and analytics. I always love going back to business schools and colleges where I can interact with the people who are taking analytics as a program or a course. So, for example, like, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been at, like, you know, Wharton School of Business or Columbia or, like, you know, George Washington, so, and, like, you know, Michigan State, we do hackathons to try and, like, you know, engage people. We kind of, you know, have lectures, like, you know, talk to these individuals and, like, you know, did workshops for them. What that allows for me to do is a few things. One, it makes me learn about the new, freshest talent that's coming to our industry. So it's not just important for them to know me. It's very important for me to know who these people are so we can customize our roles and, like, you know, our onboarding process, but also the hiring process. At the same time, it actually allows me to find some of these people. So, and then I, like, you know, I'm a very, very shameless networker. So I reach out to all the people that I feel are the best fit as soon as a role opens up on my team. So recent example is I hired a director on my team last year at Hilton within like a month of the role opening up. And, like, you know, basically I reached out to a bunch of people that I felt were, like, the strongest on LinkedIn or on email. And then, like, you know, we quickly, like, you know, start the process and we kind of, you know, brought somebody in very, very soon. So, so I think networking goes a long way in terms of, like, you know, knowing and, like, you know, hiring people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can definitely attest to that with, you know, with the organization, the division I'm leading that's, you know, focused on niche IT advanced, you know, skill set that will help other companies, you know, find, source, and attract. One strategy that really did stand out, which I think is often overlooked, is working with, you know, with education providers, with universities. Nice. I often, you know, recommend to a lot of my clients that are looking for specific, you know, IT talent that, mm-hmm. you know, we go and actually, I spend a lot of time with my alma mater, with Harvard Business School, where we do a lot of presentations, you know, and talks and career events where we share some information about given, you know, not only the company, but who actually is, you know, in the leadership position of those teams, who they're going to be working for and what are the different projects that they're leading. I think that's, you know, a very powerful tool. And, you know, I'm excited to see that some of the companies, like, you know, and you take initiative to attract that. So definitely, you know, very exciting. Shivanku, last but not least, I'm curious, what are you currently reading and what is one book that you always recommend to others and why?
So I am currently reading Becoming by Michelle Obama. And it's not my first time reading it. It's actually my second time reading it. I think for me personally, it's a feel good book. Like, you know, it lifts up my spirits and it also gives me the encouragement, given all that's going around, that if we really have the grit and if we really have the persistence, we can truly and lead from the front. So I'm currently reading that again, and it's an amazing book. So that's what I'm reading today. Mm-hmm. What I would recommend for people to read, that's a good one. So there are like so many books I could think of. So I would say there's this book by Sam Walton. He basically there's a book called "Is Made in America" by Sam Walton. It's his biography. He is the one who created Walmart, and I love that book. My mentor last year was the chief customer officer at Walmart, Janie Whiteside. She recommended that book to me, and I fell in love with that book. The reason is it's basically a very organic story of somebody who made it so big and actually never really got tired of working hard. So he kept working till the very last moment and had a passion, had a fire in him, Sam Walton, which basically went on and on and on for a very long time. And I think that book inspires me and tells me there's if you really have the passion, there's no stopping. And also there's absolutely no shame in pursuing your dream, which you might feel is the best idea, and constantly learning from your surroundings and evolving and serving. So I love that book. So I would say if somebody has a chance, go and read Sam Walton's Made in America. That's a good one.
Well, that's great. I love those recommendations, and for our listeners, we'll make the titles of these books available in the episode notes. Shivanku, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you lending your expertise with us today. Very informative episode. I personally learned a lot. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to us catching up in a couple of years to see how much you've changed and what has transpired in between.
Appreciate it. It was a pleasure chatting with you, John. And thank you so much for the time and the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.